This is Mark Strassman, reporter with California Politics Today. We're about to speak to Terry Frank, who's the general counsel for Californians Aware. Welcome to California Politics Today.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Strassman.
Why don't you tell people who aren't aware what Californians Aware is?
We're a nonprofit organization established last March to help people in this state understand their rights to open government and free expression, to understand the law, to know how to use it, and to thereby help everyone become more aware of what needs to be known to be a good citizen and to hold government accountable in a responsible way.
Are most of the people involved on a leadership level attorneys or reporters or what?
It's split essentially three ways on the board between public officials, journalists, and citizens interested in government. And yes, there are attorneys also represented in all three of those sectors.
Okay, before we get into the stem cell issue, what other notorious or important issues have you been working on previously?
Well, we've only been around since last March, but I personally was one of a handful of people involved in the drafting and passage of the legislation leading to Proposition 59, which was approved by the voters in November, and which creates a constitutional right to open government. We recently, with a number of other organizations, just before Christmas, asked Governor Schwarzenegger to direct his executive branch agencies to not use the laws allowing secrecy unless absolutely necessary. In other words, to take the kind of affirmative position toward government records that was done in the Clinton administration, which is now, I understand, been reversed by the Bush administration.
Well, what kind of response did you get from the Schwarzenegger administration on that?
We haven't heard from them yet.
Okay.
Now I think I may understand why. I'm assuming that much of the governor's staff's attention has been focused on the things we've heard about in the last couple of days about his plans for reform in several different areas. We'll have to see whether that develops, but what we asked for is certainly not inconsistent with what he says he has in mind.
Okay. Before we get on to the specifics of Prop 71 and its follow-on institutions, say something about the general principles that guide you and Californians Aware in terms of what's important about government openness and why you're focusing on it.
Well, each of us, in an increasing way as we grow up and acquire jobs and property and other hostages to fortune, are regulated by government in where we live, how we live in our homes, what we do for a living, all kinds of ways. We also pay taxes to government, and now and then, when we have a close brush with its regulation or its taxation, we pay a little more attention than usual. But we rely most of the time on the notion that if we ever have to find out more, the windows are fairly open. We can go to the city council or the school board or indeed the legislature and make our views be known and exercise our First Amendment rights, but also find out what is going on, what's planned, and so forth. To one degree or another, although there are laws on that subject, these liberties to expression and to finding out tend to erode over time if they're not affirmatively protected.
Have you seen trends, either in California or nationally, in one direction or another in this context?
Well, certainly, and again, we're not a partisan organization, but we have our eyes wide open, like many people do. And there's no question that at the federal level, secrecy in executive branch agencies has spread remarkably with the current administration in a way which began actually before any terrorist attacks, but has found I think, new rationale since that time. So the federal government, in many ways, is becoming much more secret than it has been during our lifetime.
Your group's called Californians Aware, not Americans Aware.
Right.
Do you focus your efforts here in California?
Yes. You asked about trends.
Right.
That's the remarkable one at the federal level. In California, I'd say that overall, it's a pretty steady tension between, trends this year to be a little more secretive on this issue and so forth and back and forth. But, of course, the issue you're concerned with here is a dramatic example of how bad things can be if we don't pay attention to them and try to protect transparency in government as a positive and necessary good.
So essentially your operating principle is use it or lose it.
Yeah, keep it open or it will close almost automatically just by the way large institutions tend to behave.
Okay, let's with that in the background, let's focus on Prop 71. What kind of cognizance has your group taken of Prop 71 and the Independent Citizens Oversight Committee and the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine and the way they've been going? Maybe we should even start with how that proposition was put together and promulgated and supported and passed, and whether there was enough openness in that process to suit you.
Well, I think you pointed to the real root of the problem, because most of the difficulty that we see is in the language of the proposition itself. And I don't know, nor do I really have much optimism of finding out exactly and literally who wrote that. But whoever did saw to it that the working meetings, or the meetings of the working groups, where much, if not most, of the real development of the ethical standards and scientific standards and financial controls and other kinds of things, where the real work will take place before it's presented to the Independent Citizens Oversight Committee, will be done, or can be done, completely outside the open meeting law, because that's what Prop 71 says.
Yeah,
the working groups are exempt.
Right. Now, the discussion I had earlier today with Jesse Reynolds at the Center for Genetics and Society, he enumerated that the working groups would include, they'd be divided into three, or there would be three different groups, one to deal with funding, one to do with facilities, and one to do with the standards. Is that what you understand
Yes.
the situation is? And again, what provisions were made for openness or transparency of these groups within Prop 71 in its own language?
Well, none, and that's my point. There were no provisions for openness. The provisions are in effect for secrecy. The ICOC, the overall governing body, is said to be subject to the Bagley-Keene Act, and that's all to the good, but that's like saying the legislature is open to observation at the level of the Senate and Assembly floors. You don't get to get into the committees, where of course most of the interesting and significant work on a bill is done.
Say a little bit about Bagley-Keene and what that is and what it mandates.
The Bagley-Keene Act is the state law that tells state executive branch boards and commissions that they must meet openly, that they must have their meetings preceded by adequate notice to the public of what they're going to be dealing with, and that they must provide related records, provide access to the public, and allow the public to come to the meetings and make their views known on the issues as they're taken up. So it's a lot like what we hear of as the Brown Act.
What's the difference between the Brown Act and that?
Simply the scope. The Brown Act is local, pertaining to cities, counties, and special districts in your area.
Although it's a state law.
Yes.
It applies
right.
to localities.
Right.
Okay.
The Bagley-Keene Act is the one that pertains to statewide boards and commissions.
And does it do a pretty good job of doing what your group wants to be done when it is applied?
Yes, we think so. It's a touch more complex than the Brown Act because of the greater variety of different types of agencies and what they regulate and so forth. But yeah, it's necessary, and it is widely observed, and it does the job of keeping those windows open.
And it doesn't really say anything about conflict of interest. Conflicts of interest are is another story entirely.
It is.
Okay, so we're just going to focus, and your group really doesn't work on that.
No, although I've got to say there's an obvious interplay between the transparency laws and conflict of interest, because you can know all you want to know about a particular player's interests, financially speaking, but if you can't see what he or she is doing, that's too bad.
Okay, now, again, you're saying that Prop 71 provides that Bagley-Keene applies to the operations of the ICOC, which is really, in some people refer to it as a potential rubber stamp of decisions that are really going to be made at the level of the working groups.
Yeah, I think it's fair to describe it that way. Maybe rubber stamp is a little too harsh, but I think it's the analogy is of the legislature is a good one. Sometimes things change on the floor of the legislature, but most of the changes and most of the questions, the hard questions that get asked and the candid answers that are made are in committee.
Right.
And if someone suggested that legislative committees be close their doors, Sacramento would explode. It just can't work that way.
Okay. So in your attention to this, what efforts have you made to try to get more openness or the application of Bagley-Keene to the working committees, and what have you encountered in your efforts?
Well, we wrote an initial short letter before the very first meeting, along with several other people pointing out that they had loaded up their plate very heavily with substantive issues for an organizational meeting where they were you really think of them just electing officers and sort of introducing themselves. And so that was our first letter. It was heated. They did curtail the business agenda to the elections themselves, and that was fine. The second meeting just yesterday was one that was preceded by a little better agenda and out a little earlier, but still a number of things for which no backup material was provided to the public in advance. But our main pitch, because we did write a letter to every committee member this time,
all 29 of them,
saying there are two longer term problems, and one of them is the exemption of the working groups from the Bagley-Keene Act, and
right.
We think that you, the committee, need to, as a matter of policy and a high priority, decide that those groups are going to be basically open the same as you are. Secondly, there's some quite fuzzy language about how and when the ICOC itself can go into closed session and can withhold documentation. Obviously, there will be occasions when that is needed, but they need to be kept to a minimum, and they need to be very well defined and not stretched to cover things simply because someone thinks that a relatively fuzzy label applies.
Okay, so you asked that the ICOC clarify its own rules for openness, and your principal request was that the working groups be made subject to Bagley-Keene, essentially.
Yes.
And what kind of response have you gotten back so far, if any?
Well, we didn't get any pointed response from the chair or the commission. The committee as a whole. So we don't quite know what they're going to do about that. I mean, ironically, one of the rules of Bagley-Keene is that if something is not on the agenda, they can't really do any business attached to it unless it's a real emergency. So it would be unfair of us to expect them to turn around and give us a conclusive answer at the very same meeting where we brought it up.
It would almost contradict Bagley-Keene.
That's right. So we didn't expect a conclusive answer. I saw a newspaper report quoting one of the members saying, well, obviously we have to have working groups closed so that we can have free, full, and candid discussion. That's something you always hear from people who are not used to working in government and are coming from the corporate or perhaps the academic scene, because there secrecy is the rule, and it's simply a failure to recognize that, number one, if you're a real professional and a real public servant, you get used to the idea that you can be candid in public. If you listen to the confirmation hearings for the Attorney General presumptive,
right,
you realize that people can be extremely candid in their discussion of highly sensitive matters. So I think it's you know, time for them to grow up. There may be some things that need to be discussed privately, simply because people won't apply for grants and have their own know-how be exposed in a public forum. But we think those are relatively narrow instances. And if what the working groups believe is that they can only speak with any effectiveness if the doors are closed, then I don't think they belong in government or in a quasi-governmental agency, because that's a completely different culture.
Isn't that part of what the question is, whether they're in a governmental agency, a quasi-governmental agency, or a non-governmental agency, and that's why they are exempt from a Bagley-Keene?
Well, that is something I think that they're very much, or some of them seem to be very much impressed with. But they have, after all, a license to do something with $3 billion of the public's funds. They're not a nonprofit organization. They're not a private club. They're not a private research institute. Their leadership has been saying from the word go that transparency is the rule of the day. And so I think it's time for them to really think about living up to that.
Okay, before we get into some of the what I think are almost philosophical questions, is there a there yet? When we talk about these groups, do they have a receptionist? Is there a place where you can go to ask them to do what you want?
They don't have any office. Apparently, the administrative chores are being done through the remnants of the nonprofit organization which essentially promoted the proposition, and that's the one that the chair of the committee was, Mr. Klein, was persuaded to step down from the leadership of. But my organization doesn't have a receptionist either.
Right. Okay.
It doesn't take much, believe me, to put your agenda on the internet and the backup material 10 days in advance. It takes a little bit of forethought and planning, but I promise you, if Mr. Klein really wanted it done, it would be done without having a massive building or staff around him.
Okay, now I don't want to get too much into people's motives, although that's important here as well, but is it your feeling right now that these problems have arisen because of inadvertence or calculation?
I think I have to say inadvertence, and I so far, that is, all the signs that I've seen point to an unfamiliarity with the standards and culture of transparency that government officials are used to, and others who are entering into that realm need to get used to pretty quickly.
So does that mean that it's your hope or your desire and or your expectation that once apprised of this culture of transparency in government, that the individuals responsible will respond and become set up transparent structures, or that they're going to say we're not a government agency. We don't have to show you no stinking transparency.
Well, I think it would be hard for them really to put it quite that cervically because the chair himself has taken up the cause, at least, and language of transparency himself at this most recent meeting by a statement he issued.
What did he say?
I don't have it here in front of me, but it was one that was, quite supportive of the notion that they have to be as open as possible.
And did that, going down to the working group level?
There was no specific commitment to that, no.
Okay.
What I'm saying is that if they were to decide for whatever reason that they're simply going to tough it out and be as secret as any corporate or academic institution would be, then one of the awkward things about the rest of their process is that they will never stop hearing about secrecy as a problem, and they will never stop being perceived as a group of people who really got into something where they were out of their depth in terms of living up to public expectations. And I want to stress public expectations. Proposition 71 was passed by a fairly generous margin.
60%, 59.9%.
But for every three people who voted for Proposition 71, four voted for Proposition 59, which is a constitutional amendment demanding that government groups and records be open to the people.
Right. Now, are there specific provisions in 59 that that you think are important for the operation of the Stem Cell Institute under Prop 71?
Yeah, because Prop 59, let's say that all of the open meeting laws we have right now were repealed overnight for some reason by the legislature.
Right.
You would still have Proposition 59, which would be a constitutional right of access to meetings, and so things done in that regard in secret meetings would be, unconstitutional and fundamentally invalid.
So skipping ahead to the litigation, Prop 59 would provide constitutional justification for openness in the operations of the Stem Cell Initiative organizations?
I believe so, yes. It's an independent rationale for demanding that an agency that is so much imbued with governmental powers and personality
and money
behave the same way a government agency would have to.
Okay, before we get into the politics of this, I wanted to focus on the philosophy of what needs to be open or not. A lot of my experience was with city council meetings, and I've sat there, and then they say, we're going into executive session to talk about personnel matters or pending litigation, things like that. But generally, the issue of zoning or other government policies are just debated by the council members openly in the public. They may doze off or appear to during the public input session, but the public input is part of the structure. How do you see that transferring over to discussions of, in some cases, I'm sure, highly arcane scientific biomedical research issues and questions of what research ought to be done, who ought to be doing it, how qualified they are to do it, and how much money it needs, which seem to me to be the main focus of these working groups?
Well, I think that you begin at the beginning and realize that due to the Prop 71 exemptions, these working groups, the first things they will be working on are some very threshold questions of procedures and policies and standards and ethical constraints and requirements and so forth. So
right.
they're setting the very rules that they will operate under, and they will be doing that as a first order of business. That certainly is something that demands full transparency.
And in fact, doesn't include any of the issues of personalities or proprietary information or any of the things that could be put forward perhaps later as reasons for secrecy.
Right.
But the debate over what the rules ought to be doesn't involve any of that.
No.
And you're saying that it's essential that those debates be transparent.
Yes, although I obviously don't have a good or any real map in my head for exactly how the more advanced discussions will take place, it's part of the role of these working groups not only to develop the standards, but to see to it that they are applied in a consistent and effective way. So long-term sort of oversight really begins in the working groups themselves. This oversight committee is required to meet only twice a year. It's got 29 members, and how often are they going to get together? So the real work is going to be done week to week and month to month in these working groups, and that will involve not just the development of standards, but the maintenance of the standards as things go forward.
Does that mean the guards are going to be guarding themselves here?
Well, the guards are going to be
making the rules and then enforcing them?
Reporting essentially on and taking into account as to whether proper standards are being observed and so forth. It's the kind of thing where if it's done in the open, it may seem fairly tedious or routine or not that exciting, but unless it's done in the open, the danger is that supervision and accountability of this organization is going to drift.
Okay. Now, is Californians aware? You said you have no particular map yet. Do you know if Californians aware, either by itself or with other groups, might be putting together essentially a model transparency set of regulations that you're going to advocate to the public and suggest to the ICOC that they implement?
Well, the model already exists pretty clearly. It is the Bagley-Keene Act. It's a law, as I say, that everyone in state government is reasonably well familiar with if they work with boards and commissions. It is the logical and obvious starting point or benchmark. Because of the particular things that this institute does, there may have to be special recognitions of sensitive areas that need protection for fairness to those competing for grants and so forth. But the model is already there. The mistake, the fundamental and I think rather mysterious error in Prop 71 was removing the working group process from this default transparency model.
Did you know anything about its legislative history or
it's
there?
I have no idea who inserted that language or why they did it.
And that process is secret, isn't it?
Well, it's not...
How it got there.
It's not secret in the sense that someone, deliberately tried to hide it, but it's not something that is announced to the public. In other words, I think you might well be able to find out simply by asking, but if you look at the text of Prop 71 or anything publicly available so far about it, you don't know, literally, who drafted it.
You know, I don't want to go too far afield here, but I was watching a PBS program about Woodrow Wilson a few days ago, and one of his 14 points was open covenants openly agreed to.
Mm-hmm.
And he believed that secrecy behind a lot of behind the scenes manipulation almost always led to some kind of bad result. For example, World War One, and because people had secret treaties that other people didn't know about, and they couldn't act that way. Is there a similar dynamic? It's obviously not as grave, but is that one of the reasons why you think openness is so important?
Well, I think that's certainly one way of putting it. Covenants is simply another word for contracts or deals,
right?
And if this isn't about as visible and above board and subject to scrutiny as one would expect from a state body, then the risk is that there will arise private understandings and unpublicized relationships. One of the aspects that you mentioned we haven't talked about is the relationship to conflicts of interest.
Right.
That's almost a special area of concern for this group because, by definition, those involved in the 29 seats of the ICOC certainly, while it may not be a conflict of interest, have an unusually inside interest in the Institute as a whole. They're not, this is not a sort of literal citizens oversight group that's drawn from the populace as a whole. These are all people who are players.
Right.
And they're players in different arenas and in different games. And I think that the risk of conflicts that, you know, would not occur to the ordinary person is higher here than in the legislature or in bodies where you know people are essentially drawn from the public, and you know without any particular professional qualification or prior background.
And does that also apply to the people in the working groups?
Yes, because they presumably will be very much like or reflections of the kind of inside player that the players that sit on the ICOC itself.
And some of the situations may be that people will need to recuse themselves or not recuse themselves on issues that directly affect them monetarily. In the discussion that I had earlier today with Jesse Reynolds, I raised the issue of whether or not members of the working group will be able to recommend the payment of government money to organizations to which they are either that either employ them or in which they have investments in stocks or bonds. Is what's your understanding about how open to conflict the rules are now?
Well, I really don't know. For example, if and what we're talking about right now is one of the things that the working groups presumably are going to be hammering out and defining. And, of course, we want that to be public.
Right.
But to take a simple contrast, if a person sits on a city council and is going to be involved in either voting on a matter or doing anything as a public official to influence the vote of colleagues on a matter, he or she may not have any extraordinary personal financial interest in that. Or to put it the other way around, a city council member who owns a paving company cannot vote on the decision to whom to award the Corporation Yard paving contract to.
Or even really tell his colleagues how he feels they ought to vote.
Right. I mean, what they can do is, declare the conflict or the personal interest and come down in the, and this is kind of interesting sometimes, come down in the audience and speak quite candidly as the business person.
Right.
And say, I'm Joe Contractor now, and I'll tell you that we can do a better job for a lower amount than anyone else in town, and I sure hope you give me that job.
So they can do that, but they can't vote on the on who gets the contract.
Well, they can't vote on it, and they can't sit behind the dais and try to argue that it's a better job for the city and so forth. It's a kind of a fine line there, but. The point is that everyone knows that there is this tension between their personal interest and their public responsibility. All the connecting wires are above the ground, fully visible, and so forth.
Right.
Are the rules going to be exactly the same? Are you going to have other rules that say, well, if you sit on a working committee and you vote a grant to a certain company, then, you know, you can't go to work for them for, you know, until 5 years later.
Right. Or, for example, if there's, say, there's a professor of biotechnology who has to decide on funding for a program for an academic department to which he either did belong, does belong, or might belong, on how much money should be allocated for, say, graduate education in some biotechnology area, which would mean if it passes that more graduate students would come to that program, it would be bigger, it would get more attention from private companies apart from the stem cell funding, and when he or she went back to that department, it would be a bigger department, and they would have more fund, budget, and notoriety as a result. That's the kind of conflict we're really talking about.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's it would be one thing if Prop 71 said, oh, and by the way, the only researchers or universities or scientific teams that will be eligible for grants under this program will be those in, let's say, India.
Right.
And
well, I think the rule says only in California.
Well, but I mean, let's say it said only in India.
Okay.
It would be a lot easier then for the ICOC and the working groups to sit back and say, well, you know, we don't have any irons in the fire on this, so our job is exclusively to come up with rules that will be fair and equitable and scientifically, promising and all those kinds of things. Complete objectivity.
So, in fact, it might have been better since one of the justifications for passing Prop 71 was the stimulus it was going to give to the California economy. All the money has to be spent in California, who knows if that's exactly going to be the case, that scientists from India, Massachusetts, South America, and Europe ought to be constituting these groups, and among that population, people with the fewest possible connections to California institutions, rather than the way it was done, which is replete intensely, an interlocking directorate and all-star team of people with connections to biotechnology within California.
Well, that's certainly one way of putting it. If all the money's to be spent here, and all the decisions about who gets it to spend are made by people who reside here and are in the game, so to speak, then, I guess it's good that in some sense the money may be sticking around locally, but is it going to give us the best science?
Or conversely, having stacked these panels with Californians, whether all the money needs to be spent somewhere else to avoid conflicts of interest, although conflict of interest protection is, as we've been discussing here for half an hour, not a priority of the legislation as drafted and passed.
Right. So if you're going to really understand, or if the public's really going to understand everything that's being done to safeguard against avoidable conflicts, then the process that assures that has to be very public, it seems to me.
Because there's a kind of bias now to both secrecy, winks, nods, and self-dealing or quasi-self-dealing.
Well, let's say it's already a very close and defined and not that well publicly understood community of interest, but it is spending a lot of public. It is going to be spending a lot of public money, and not only spending a lot of public money, but for purposes that many, many people have put, great personal faith and hope into, and so people really do. People who voted for Prop 71 obviously wanted something more than just, poke a stick in President Bush's eye. I think
right.
They really wouldn't have considered spending that amount of money without thinking that, yes, it will provide solutions.
Well,
it will save lives.
In fact, it was pitched, it was advertised, it was promoted, it was sold not as advancing medical science on an abstract basis for the sake of human knowledge, but as it was the Coalition for Cures.
Right.
And that's what you're saying people are expecting.
Well, they're entitled to hope that if cures don't emerge easily from this research, that at least it is carefully and honestly devoted toward finding cures.
So, in fact, it's seriously in the interest of the participants here that they make everything open, because if it turns out that they don't get cures,
then people will be forever asking why.
Where did the money go?
Right.
Whereas if they don't get results but they're open about it, then it's likely that they won't come in for as much criticism as they would otherwise.
I would think so.
All right. So we've put together a good argument that they can use in their own self-interest to do what you want.
Yeah, I think so. It's if they are if they make a good faith attempt to be as open as California government otherwise is, then I think the public will trust them to deal with the handful of things and instances where confidentiality is obviously required. But if they take the broad brush stroke approach and say this whole category of discussion by these whole committees must be consistently secret, then I think they're really starting off on the shaky foot.
Okay, let's wrap up by asking what Californians Aware is going to be doing going forward now. Are you in a period of watchful waiting, or are you going to be aggressively monitoring all this, or are you going to go out to the public? What's your game plan for the next period here?
Well, the first order of business, I think, is to try to find out what the response is to the question or the urgent request we posed yesterday. That is, are they going to be prepared to put on their agenda for the next meeting a policy decision to impose rules like those of the Bagley-Keene Act upon the operation of these working groups?
Okay. Are they set up? That will be the test. Said. Are they set up well enough that do they have an agent for process to which you can deliver your request and ask them to put it on the agenda, or are they either so deliberately or inadvertently disorganized that that's not possible, and you can get them to say yes, we will put it on the agenda, no, we will not, and if they say no, you can go you can argue.
Well,
additionally,
I think they have enough of an identifiable set of addressees that we can keep a certain amount of pressure or insistence on, at least to learn about whether they're taking this seriously enough to put it on the next agenda.
Right. Know?
When is the next meeting? Who develops the agenda? Be on it?
When is the next meeting?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And so, so that's what your focus is now, to get on the agenda consideration of putting Bagley-Keene or something like it in place for the working groups.
Yes.
And that for you right now is the crucial question.
Well, it's the it seems to me it's the priority, and then of course I think some closer definition of what the standards will be for going into closed sessions on something as vague as proprietary information. What isn't proprietary
right. In
this context, you know?
But essentially you're going to want public discussion of how much public discussion is going to be allowed and how much public awareness and openness is going to be provided.
Right.
Okay. Well, thanks for talking about it today on California Politics Today.
Okay.
We're going to try to stay on top of the story and keep people aware about what's going on, and I hope we can talk to you again in a few weeks to get an update on how things are going from your point of view.
All right. Take care.
Thanks very much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.